Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Row Show.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are glad that you came back.
Yes,
you're going to be glad that you came back, too.
Yes, we are. Make sure and go on to the Facebook and all of that to join the conversation.
Yeah, facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow.
Is that how we do that?
You can also hit us up on Twitter, @TheMusicRowShow, and then after the show on Instagram, @TheMusicRowShow.
Yeah.
Pretty easy. Just remember The Music Row Show and just put @ in front of it, and you're good.
There you go.
Everywhere.
Right. Well, let's get to it, Hino. Let's talk about these two gentlemen here.
I think first, before you guys do that, we should have like 9 cups of coffee. What do you think?
You want to do that? Are you feeling? Yes. Are we?
Let's pick up the energy just a little, just teeny tiny bit, shall we?
See, well, we're trying to get an NPR gig, so actually, we're trying to bring it down.
Hey, welcome to the Music Row Show. We're going to be talking with
Pete Schwede.
Rockers. Good times.
About 50 foot putt there.
Good times.
All right. Well, we are really happy to welcome the Nelson brothers, also known as twins Matthew and Gunnar Nelson. Classic rockers.
Used to be Hot Swedish Chicks.
That's right. You guys are in trouble because you got the both of us. This is going to be fun.
And you have the both of us. It's just going to be a train wreck.
Each other out.
Hey, man, thank you so much for having us on your show.
Absolutely. Really. Well, they had some success in the 90s.
In the
double
70s?
Platinum album called, their debut was After the Rain, which featured their number one hit, Can't Live Without Your Love and Affection. Love that song. Mm-hmm. And then they've continued to tour over the years. They have a very loyal fan base. Matthew and Gunnar also continue to honor their father, performing under the name Ricky Nelson Remembered, their dad being Ricky Nelson, of course. Mm-hmm. And
spoiler
they're
alert.
Check this out. They're listed in the Guinness Book of World Records as the only family to reach number one in three separate generations of the family. You know, Ozzy and Harriet, their grandparents, is mm-hmm. their dad, Ricky Nelson, and then them, of course.
And our uncle is Mark Harmon from NCIS.
I know.
Awesome.
Which means
a very freaky
you have
Christmas
another
dinner.
Uncle that's Clint Black, right? By marriage.
No.
Is Lisa Harmon not related to
No.
Harmon, not Hartman.
Oh, Hartman.
Yes.
Dude.
Oh,
you missed it.
Right.
I was so excited
before
about
we get
that.
Into too much trouble, let me say, Matthew and Gunnar Nelson, welcome to the Music
Thank
Show.
You very much.
Thank you.
My goodness.
I don't know how I got that wrong.
Lisa well, Hart?
And we're the blonde ones here.
From Entertainment
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, listen.
Yeah, Uncle Mark is doing really well. He obviously plays Gibbs on NCIS, which is officially Planet Earth's most successful television show.
It's been doing amazing.
He's been doing great, and he just got picked up for another 3 seasons.
Sweet.
And I hope it never ends. It's a really good run. He's worked his whole life for that gig, so that's really cool.
He is a
His father, Tom Harmon, won the Heisman Trophy
football
at Michigan.
Football player.
Yeah, in 1940.
So really what you're saying is that your family is just a bunch of underachievers.
Yeah, we just
all the
saying
way
that
around.
We were
genetically engineered in a laboratory.
We thought you guys, you know, we were listening to Jenny before we came out here. We thought you guys were going for like this second gen sort of family theme here tonight.
No.
Yeah.
No.
You guys plan that out?
No.
Yeah.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
No, yes.
I don't know. Do you want us to?
No, you know, it's amazing.
Always take the credit.
We love living in Nashville. And part of that is that it's like the world's biggest small town. Everybody knows everybody.
Right.
And it was really cool listening to her talk about her family and all that. And, you know, I actually was able to get up here from the James Burton Guitar Festival in Shreveport, Louisiana, to be in time for his son's birth on Vince's bus. I got the deadhead on.
No, my son wasn't born on
your
Vince's bus.
Your son was born on Vince's bus?
No. Vince actually played the concert with James Burton, and I was down there playing too. And then Matthew's wife went into labor, and we weren't going to make it back in time for his birth.
It was quicker for them to actually drive back to Nashville. And so
on Vince's bus that night, and we got to make it to the hospital.
How cool is that?
Isn't that neat?
Yeah.
Real life stuff, guys.
Thank
you.
Real life stuff. Wow. Well,
where do you go from there, Scott?
I don't know.
We got plenty of places to go. Go ahead and ask.
Let's do it. Well, let's start with this. We've been doing the show for about 10 years. We've never improved, by the way, so I'm sorry about that. But 10 years of interviewing folks has given us the opportunity to hear, I can't even tell you how many guests have counted your dad as one of their major influences.
How cool is that? That's
and just
really
this
great.
Week, I've had several people call and say, oh my gosh, there, Ricky was, you know, he was so important to so many different people's artistry. And I know that you guys, you know, I know you probably know off the top of your head when you realize that dad was famous, but when did you realize how important he was to the entire legacy of rock music? I mean, that's a there's not many people that can say that.
Well, it was that, and it was also he had two phases of his career that were really important. He was one of the only, if the only, teen idol guy.
He was definitely the first.
Well, he was the first. Life magazine coined the phrase teen idol to describe him.
Yeah.
But he had an amazing band, guys like James Burton and Joe Osborne, and I mean, seminal musicians, amazing musicians. But he also reinvented himself as a pioneer of country rock. He was there at the very beginning with everything that was coming out of Southern California in the late 60s. You know, you had Poco, Linda Ronstadt, Rick Nelson and the Stone Canyon Band, the Burrito Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Later on, the Eagles. Eagles. That was all coming from that same...
It was. Actually, Randy Meisner, one of the founding members of the Eagles, was in the Stone Canyon Band, or Dad's band, 2 years before he founded the Eagles with Henley and Fry. So that's the stuff we grew up with. And so it was really neat to see two different things. You know, we actually got into the rockabilly stuff that he experienced when he was a kid. And I mean a kid, 16 is when he started. There were no rules, there were no record producers. And frankly, they made it up as they went along. He was producing his own records, actually with our grandpa Ozzy. And the cats, I mean, Gunnar got a chance to talk to Sam Phillips from Sun Records saying, I think that they would have signed our dad to Sun. They just couldn't do it. He had to do that darn television show that everybody watched. Every
also
week.
That, you know, unfortunately for him, Grandpa Ozzy was really, really, really smart.
Yeah,
and he couldn't make that deal swing.
Yeah, Ozzy had a law degree, so you know you couldn't really
couldn't pull one over on.
Yeah, he really couldn't do it.
Yeah,
and well, that's a good thing. I guess
it was a good thing, and they made some amazing records, and they had kind of a West Coast and Memphis duel. If you think about it, I mean, out of Los Angeles, you had Ricky Nelson at the very beginning. There, you had his buddies
Eddie Cochran and Gene Vincent.
Yeah, so
that was really the left coast. Yeah. Was represented by that. Of course, everything out of Memphis coming out of Sun. You had the Stax guys doing their thing.
Right.
You had the doo-woppers on the East Coast. That was very much New York sort of thing.
Yeah. You think about it, it was really territorial.
But it was kind of neat that air travel wasn't then what it is now. And because they were doing the family television show, Ozzy and Harriet, 5 days a week, he couldn't travel to record at Sun. But what it did, it gave some really, really cool, very California-specific music. It didn't sound like what was coming out of Sun. And what Sam Phillips told me is, you know, no bones about it, whenever Ricky would come out with a new single, all of the guys at Sun with Sam would load into the car and go down to the record store and buy the singles to hear what Ricky Nelson was doing out in California.
Wow.
And they sounded equally as vibrant and energetic, but just a little bit different, which was cool.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, Bill Putnam, there was a great recording engineer that founded a company called Universal Audio, was his engineer.
Oh, wow.
And so the records sounded amazing. I mean, the man built his own consoles. And for some reason, our dad sounded like he was right there, which a lot of the ladies really loved.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of ladies, our former producer before producer Logan was producer Katrina, and she just texted in, Matthew and Gunnar, eep! So I think she's kind of eep.
Is eep good?
I'm not sure what eep
is
means.
Good.
Is eep good?
But
good.
I think she's excited, so that's a good
that's
thing.
The beginning of the Jet Screamer lyric, eep, op, ork, ah, that means I love you on the Jetsons.
Nice.
I didn't grow up in front of the TV. No, not me.
We're not 70s kids at all.
So how did your family respond?
You know,
respond?
It was a good question. You asked about, like, when did we know
that
pop was famous and that it was different? And, you know, it was just kind of our normal.
Really?
You know, for when we were growing up, I mean, I don't want to use the term, it was all relative, but it really honestly was.
Probably the same thing for Jenny, the same thing, you know. Just
well, but I mean, I'm talking past famous, because that's, you know, famous is,
okay.
You know, but I mean, I'll when you realized, wow.
Give you perspective. We had a lot of hippies hanging out at our house in Hollywood Hills when we were growing up, late 60s. And we say this in our Ricky Nelson Remember Show, this is the truth. The guy that used to come over from next door, he rented a house for 2 years, and we called him Uncle George. And he looked like skinny Jesus, and he was really sweet.
Harry Krishna.
And, yeah, and it was George Harrison from the Beatles. And, you know, the guy with the crazy hair that wouldn't leave was Bob Dylan. And our babysitter was Mama Cass Elliott. And that was real. That was our life. And to us, it was normal. We didn't really think that it was abnormal for people to, I mean, it was normal for people to come up during dinner and ask for autographs from everybody at the table, grandparents too. We thought, oh, just people, that's
the
same. It
also kind of wasn't fair too, because he grew up in front of American eyes on television. That show ran for 14 and a half years.
Right.
435 episodes. And it was at a time when you really didn't have the choices, obviously, that we have now on TV. So when America tuned into your show, it was like the Truman Show.
Everybody was tuning in, right? Yeah. We were talking about that, intern Peyton and I were talking about that on the way in.
There's so much traffic nowadays, and it wasn't that way.
There wasn't the chatter.
And so in the beginning, he was kind of like the irrepressible Ricky, the burr-headed, blonde-head, wisecracking kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he started to sing, man, everything changed. because the television fame, it's funny. It's like every television star wants to be a musician and vice versa. Right. All our dad told us is everything changed because all the same girls that were in geometry class with him at Hollywood High all of a sudden wanted to rip his pants off. You know, just everything changed. That kind of fame is different.
Yeah.
You know, and he was, man, it's hard to describe how big of a star he really was.
Like, we have no way to fathom it now.
Yeah. There were only two artists in the 50s, two rock artists, to have number one albums. Only two. Mm-hmm. Elvis and Ricky. That was it. The guy sold 280 million singles in his career.
Good
had crazy. 40 top 40 hits. And funny enough, with all that early rockabilly success, he loved country music, and he came out here to Nashville. And as it, you know, happens with some of those early pioneers, you heard about so many of them getting chased away. Our dad was one of them. He didn't have an easy time here in town, but it was good. Everything happens for a reason. He went back to Southern California, hanging out with Dylan and all of his friends. And in his mind, he heard this really cool sound. He was the first guy to put a Marshall half stack and a guy on a Les Paul right next to Tom Brumley, an original Buckaroo on pedal steel. And a sound was born. Yeah. But it wouldn't have gone quite that way.
Had he stayed here,
exactly. Right. And he wasn't selling as many records as he did. You know, Garden Party hit about 5 years after that. Mm-hmm. But he was happier than he'd ever been. And that's what he really convinced us when we started playing music. And he didn't push us into it. We were young. We just always wanted to do what our dad did. He really encouraged us to be writers. And that's really how we came to Nashville. We live here now. But, I mean, 20 years ago, we started writing songs with friends, people like Gary Burr and Victoria Shaw and Gary Nicholson and just amazing talents.
Oh, yeah.
And that's really what it came down to. Our dad really encouraged us to be songwriters, and we were fortunate. He never had a chance to have a number one hit with something he wrote. Garden Party almost made it there, but our singles did. And so we still write. That's our truest joy, and it wouldn't have been the same without our dad actually getting chased out of Nashville.
Well, also, too, we grew up at a time when he was putting the Stone Canyon Band together. That's when we were kind of like musically impressionable. I don't remember a time we were growing up, our father didn't have an acoustic guitar in his hand and wasn't writing songs, or the Stone Canyon Band wasn't being rehearsed down the hallway. And it was just so cool. I mean, my first conscious memory was sitting on an apple crate on the side of the stage at Knott's Berry Farm in Orange County watching our dad. And I made this connection of like, he's having a great time. The audience is having a great time. This is the greatest job ever. I want to do that.
Yeah.
And so it was that early. We got our first instruments at 6 years of age. We never gave it up. It for a lot of kids, it's a phase or a fad. It wasn't. Pop was on the road all the time. And when he came back, I mean, sure enough, when we were like 11 or 12, we recorded our very first single that Matthew wrote for a birthday present. And our dad produced the session. And then we were hooked. I mean, his dad.
Who was it a birthday present for?
Well, it was for us. It was two of us.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
It was a surprise, a birthday present. Our parents.
We were awesome. We were 12, and yeah, they told us we had a dentist appointment on our 12th birthday.
Yeah, you want to get some salty kids on your hands. Yeah. Tell them at 12 that they got to go to the dentist on their birthday.
You know, so you can imagine. Yeah. You know, we're the last kids at school that day. They purposely, our mom picked us up late in the Country Squire station wagon, and we rolled into this mini mall kind of area, and she said, I'm going to go park. You guys go in. You guys flip a coin over who gets to, you know, get their teeth drilled first. And so we walked in and kind of walked through this hallway, and I saw a gleam, and it looked like a drum set. Wow, that looks like Gunner's drum set over there, and that looks like my bass guitar. Oh, what's going on? I saw our dad waving from behind control room glass, and it was a surprise birthday party. He thought it was a real kick to record our first song. And his guitar player, John Beeland, who actually played with Dolly Parton and people like that, you know, played guitar with us. And these great ladies came in and sang backup vocals with us. And they were so cool. They hung out. And all our family came in and had birthday cake. We didn't know until after everybody left that our background singers were the Pointer Sisters.
Wow. Oh, you know, my gosh.
Just totally normal childhood, guys.
Yeah.
You know?
So hearing ourselves back on that cassette, cassettes were state of the art.
State of the time. Right.
At the time, and hearing us even sound like the Chipmunks, it didn't matter. We were hooked. That was it.
Wow.
Yeah. That was,
so
that was
do we have a CD of that song somewhere?
Yeah, we put it on as a hidden track on one of our albums, on an album called Life. And, you know, it rolls about a minute, and then this thing comes in, and it's pretty, you can find everything on the internet. I'm sure it's on YouTube.
I'll look it up.
Yeah.
I'll look it up.
It's called Feelings of Love. And I'm not really sure what kind of feelings of love I had at 12, but they were there.
They were there.
They were intense.
Hey, we got to take a break. This segment was brought to you by the good guys over at Main Street Productions, mainstreetproductions.org. Videos are still an important component of putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
With YouTube and with there are, you know, video shows all over the country that are all over the world.
Even like for songwriters and stuff. I mean, you don't, yeah, not even necessarily for recording artists. I mean, sometimes it's just great to get your songs out there to put it with a video. And yeah, so when you do that kind of thing, you don't want to spend a fortune. And that's where the guys at Main Street Productions come in, because they do amazing work, but, you know, we lowly songwriters can afford them.
Yeah, they understand the budget, but they're also doing feature film work, so you're using state-of-the-art technology and people that understand,
right,
how to use it. They're just great. Check them out at mainstreetproductions.org.
Yep, and we're going to be back with a lot more of the Nelson Brothers here on the Music Bro Show, so come on back. Yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's Try My Love. Matthew and Gunnar Nelson, the Nelson Brothers.
We wrote that one with Gary Nicholson. What an amazing songwriter he is.
Yeah.
One of my favorite, if not my favorite. Yeah.
Remember, we sat down and, you know, we got to know him, of course, before we started writing with him. But what was great about it was a couple of things. One, I'm a fan of his songs. But he said, okay, I see you guys as the new Everly Brothers. So we're going to write a song like that. And it's going to be the Everly Brothers meets Linda Ronstadt. And then he said, I want to show you this picture in my recording studio. And it was a photograph of this little kid on a table with a plastic guitar and some 50s picture, some chick with the cat eye glasses and a beehive hair. He said, that's me on the table. That's my cousin. And she had just put me on the table, said, okay, do Ricky Nelson.
No kidding.
Yeah. So that's where it came full circle on that one.
Wow.
Pretty neat.
Wow. Wow. Well, you guys, you know, we were talking about the obviously the family legacy, but when you guys first started out, before I guess it was when 16, 17, 18 is when you guys were really starting this, trying to get out there as musicians, you weren't really a guaranteed success, and you really
actually it was opposite that
you struggled to gain traction in LA.
Sure.
For years, and then you went overseas and kind of, I heard you say you guys kind of found yourselves. What was it that helped you gain focus creatively during that time, and what?
Well, we actually started playing professionally in LA clubs when we were 12.
Right.
They actually had to pass a law to allow us to. Hang on a second. I'm getting the move into the microphone thing. But I'm actually going to have to marry this microphone if I get any closer. So if you could turn me up a little bit, I'd appreciate that. All right. Basically, we started playing professionally in the LA clubs. We were obviously too young to stay there, so we had to get escorted in and out. But we were doing shows 4 and 5 nights a week during the time of all the skinny tie bands.
Mm-hmm.
They came out of LA. So anything with the in front of the name, like the Knack and the Go-Go's.
The Motels. We were playing with those people.
So it was cool because we were clearly the youngest people out there doing that. But it was kind of a cutthroat little circuit that they had going on there. And it prepped us for later on in our lives. We were never a part, believe it or not, of that whole Sunset Strip 80s hairband thing. We never did that. We were too busy writing and in the studio doing that. We missed all of that fun. But
best.
Yeah, I think so. We actually really wanted to be a heavy version of the Hollies, you know, the Hollies and the Birds and stuff. That's kind of, you know, our dad's Stone Canyon band. That's kind of what we did. We just, what really kind of focused us, I think, was going overseas and writing with different writers. We went to Australia. That was kind of fun. Little River Band.
Yeah, when they're talking about going overseas, though, we had a trip where Geffen Records, who we were on at the time, sent us over to do some songwriting appointments. And one of the guys we wrote with was Russ Ballard from Argent.
Okay.
Written so many unbelievable songs.
I mean, you could do Magic for America was his. Hold Your Head Up. Great songs.
I mean, fantastic songwriter. And when we were over there, the British scene was always a little bit different because they're really fashion forward over there, and that's really a big part of the whole thing. It was decades before the visual element that you guys were just talking about on that commercial was so important. The Brits were like all about, okay, so what's your guys' image? What are you about? And so we took what we learned from those conversations over in England and brought them back with us. That's why the look on our first record was so outlandish and outrageous. We wanted people to really take notice of basically, we thought, okay, people are going to be zipping through MTV, which at the time was the biggest radio station in the world.
Right.
And if you're lucky as a new artist, you've got a second and a half to keep people's attention, or they're going to warp through the channel. And so when everybody else was doing the black and white warehouse videos, mm-hmm. We were all about color. And we put a lot of thought into that whole thing. And it worked. You know, love us or hate us, everybody knew who we were at the time. And then grunge happened on our label halfway through our first tour. And it was the single largest paradigm shift in music industry history.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah. Everything was different overnight. And during that time, it really took us, about 10 years to recover. And we spent some time making some follow-up records to our first album. But that's when we started to tour. We went out with Styx and Frampton and America and a lot of our friends. Great tour was actually Air Supply. That was awesome.
That was.
And then we started doing the Ricky Nelson Remembered Show. Mm-hmm. And what was cool about that is, like, when we first came out, the only people that were really impressed by our lineage were the reviewers and the interviewers who were older.
Because your MTV crowd had no idea.
Not at all. We sold 10 million records to kids who had no idea who Ricky Nelson was. But their parents were impressed. And that was kind of fun. So it let us get our foot in the door and do that. But in starting to do the Ricky Nelson Remembered Show, man, we actually got to do in reverse what a lot of our heroes did first. I mean, they grew up with Ricky and James Burton. Mm-hmm. On the guitar. I mean, hearing like Paul McCartney say that, like, over in England, they never got the Ozzy and Harriet show. They thought Ricky was the famous Nelson. Right. And all of those great early records. I mean, the guy had 40 top 40s over there without the benefit of the show, just on the merits of the music. And we got to learn all of that stuff and got to sit down with James himself and learn the guitar parts and put that all together. And after playing heavy duty rock and roll through a distorted amplifier for all of these years up until that point, I realized that country pickers, man, you can take any rock guy and put him on a country gig and it won't be convincing. But chances are you can put a good country picker on a rock gig and he'll do just fine.
Yep. You cannot hide behind a Telecaster.
You can't. Nope. I mean, it's a truth telling machine. You know, it really honestly is. And
you're either good or you're not.
That's it. You got it or you don't. And it's been really great. So for the last 10 years, we've also been doing that Ricky Nelson Remembered Show to prepare us for what we're doing now. And I wouldn't have it any other way.
That's terrific.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, speaking of merits of the music, we'd love to hear you play something.
Well, a couple of years ago,
beautiful guitars in your hand.
Gunnar and I got a chance to get on a bill over at CMA Music Fest.
Ah.
And it was one of those weird things where we heard that Rolling Stone was sending out a stunt reviewer. Because, you know, the Nelson twins were playing at CMA Music Fest.
Well, this is what does that mean, stunt reviewer?
Well, I think they were expecting something tragic to happen.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Okay.
It was kind of like the one of these things is not like the other. Uh-huh. They were expecting, you know, spandex, long-haired Matthew and Gunnar to come out there in the middle of a country festival.
Right.
Everybody else had their bands and they had their production. Matt and I went out just like this and played this song that we have a rule because we pride ourselves on being songwriters. We will only do an outside song if we wished we'd written that song. And I heard this played for the first time by our very good friend, Gary Burr, at the Bluebird Cafe one night. And he honored us by allowing us to cut this song and play it live. And we've kind of adopted it as our own. So this is a shout out to Gary in Georgia. But it's a wonderful song called 1,000 Wild Horses.
Just when I thought the demons I fought were dead and gone, straight out of the blue, someone like you comes along. And I don't need to turn and look over my shoulder, I already know from the sound. It's 1,000 wild horses thundering behind me, hell-bent on running me down. Well, I thought I was fast, but the sins of my past are faster still. And I'm wasting my time trying to leave them behind, 'cause I never will. But One drink too many, one kiss too deep, and I feel that old shake in the ground. That's 1,000 wild horses thundering behind me, hell bent on running me down. Each one is branded, each one is mine. Each one's a darkness that I can't deny. I know they're coming, there's nowhere to hide. I'm gonna get run down, or I'm gonna ride. Right now they're just a big cloud of dust, but pretty soon I'll do something stupid like I tend to do, and I'll let them loose. So if you're thinking that maybe you're the one who can save me, baby, this ain't no merry-go-round. It's 1,000 wild horses thundering behind me, hell-bent on running me down. There's 1,000 wild horses thundering behind me, hell-bent on running me down.
So good.
Man, that's good. Very good. That Gary Bird.
That
dang
Gary
it.
Bird.
I know.
Georgia Middleman.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
Her too.
We love you guys.
Your songwriting.
That's really good.
One of these days, we're going to make that a big old fat hairy hit. I promise you.
I hope
I believe it.
I hope so.
I think this is kind of the radio debut of that one with us behind it.
That's right.
I think so.
There
good.
You go.
Hey.
How about that?
You guys sing so well together in harmony. How long did it take to work that out?
We split from the same cell. They say, you know, sibling harmonies. We love that thing.
We worked it out in the womb, man. We did.
Did you really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're womb mates.
Yeah. It was never something we really had to work on. You know, we growing up again around the Stone Canyon Band with that kind of vocalizing happening in the house, that was just normal. You did that. If you were in a band, you were expected to be able to sing like that.
Right.
And you're expected to be able to harmonize and hear the parts and do all that. It was never a struggle to us. It's really fish to water stuff for us.
Wow.
Okay. You were just talking about songwriting before this, how you guys are really pride yourself on playing a lot of your own stuff. Mm-hmm. You guys have always, even with that first album, such a strong hook and melodic sensibility to your guys' music. Where did that, I mean, how was that nurtured early on from home?
That's a good question. Gunnar and I, we played years in clubs, as we mentioned. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that was late coming was realizing that it was all about the power of a song. And it was actually, our dad kind of hinted at it, but he was a subtle guy. There was a record producer that was a family friend. He was there actually the night we were born. He was producing our father. He actually wound up producing a lot of bands. Like, he was the guy that actually put the Eagles together for Linda Ronstadt. A guy named John Boylan. Mm-hmm. John Boylan, funny enough, wound up producing Bailey and the Boys, Michael and Kathy Bonnegra.
Oh, right. And who's Alyssa Bonnegra?
Alyssa Bonnegra, right. So
everyone knows everyone, man.
Now John Boylan, after our father passed away, realized that we were working hard, but we weren't working as smart as we could. And he sat us down and he said, look, I want to talk to you guys about something, and you need to know, from my point of view, about the power of a song. If you look at my career, and this is a guy that did everything from Linda Ronstadt to Boston. He found the first and produced that, and Quarter Flash, and I mean, you know, Edie Brickell, and like very just he'd done so many things. He said, look at everything I've done. It's all about the power of a hit song, a good song, and you guys need to write. And that's what we did. We set off relearning our craft as songwriters. And from that point on, that's when we started collaborating with different people. We figured even if we didn't get a great song, we'd learn something. And that's exactly where it started, really, was, and something you can go anywhere in the world and you can find somebody at a club that can play better than you, sing better than you, God knows, look better than you. Mm-hmm. But it's a matter of what is it that you do uniquely? And for us, it's the two brothers singing together. Right. We always have this thing, our catchphrase is the boys always have each other. We do. Mm-hmm. We really do. You know, we go to war when we're out there playing. And I know he's got my back, and I've got his. And that's been very necessary.
Well, we're growing up, though. We grew up in Southern California. And the attitude as a songwriter is very different out there. You know, when you write a song, and it's taken me 20 years to find that out, living here now. If you write a song in LA, the first question from your peers is going to be, what does it sound like? And if you write a song in Nashville, your first question from your Nashville peers is going to be, what's it about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's the hook? What's
so
it about? Yeah.
To us, paradise exists in the two worlds meeting, because I think that there's nothing like a strong melodic hook.
Right.
And you know, we probably have different answers as to why that was always important. Obviously, playing the LA clubs, no one had songs. If someone had, I mean, like every band had one song that the audience really responded to. So our whole thing was like, well, what if you had a whole record of songs like that? Wouldn't that be cool? And yeah. So that's really kind of been our philosophy. But in putting the whole thing together with hanging out with the storytellers like the Gary Burrs of the world, it forces you to up your game a little bit. And for me growing up, I mean, as a singer, I'll only admit this to you guys and to the millions of people who are listening to this right now and will.
A million and four.
That's right. That's right. Is that as a songwriter, as an artist and a vocalist, I don't have the facility that some of the natural singers that I've grown up listening to have. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't have the ability, no matter how many vocal lessons I took or years and years and years of singing on the road. I mean, I can't trill like an Alyssa Bonner girl. I don't have that natural thing. So it forced me and Matthew, I mean, he's a better singer than I am. He can hit higher notes, but...
Well, I am.
But it it
and
forced
more modest,
us,
too. Yeah.
It really did force us to write songs that were even more melodic. So, you know, people wouldn't... I mean, I'm not the kind of guy who could sing the phone book and be interesting.
Yeah.
So the songs have to do the work for us. Everything happens for a reason. My point is to any artists out there or songwriters that have the same kind of thing, you know, the Lord giveth and he taketh away. And in our case, Love and Affection was as hooky as it was when it came out. It had like five or six different major hooks going on.
Right.
Because we grew up with, you know, having to have that in our pocket when we went out on stage. Then you add the two brothers singing together and that's its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming to Nashville and learning how to tell a story when you do it. Man, we're pretty excited about what we've got cooking right now, what's in the future for us, because the way we look at it, it's really taken us our whole lives to get here.
That's exciting.
Oh, well, we're going to take a break, but we're definitely going to want to talk about that when we come back.
Yep.
We're here with Matthew and Gunnar Nelson, the Nelson brothers, and we will be back in just a few minutes on the Music Row Show. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. That is Matthew and Gunnar Nelson doing a brand new version of Love and Affection. I love that.
Thank you.
That is awesome.
Thank you. We actually got to do that with our friend Brian Tankersley. And Brian is responsible. He was the town's remix engineer forever. He did Boot Scoot and Boogie for Brooks and Dunn.
Yeah.
He did the
club mix of that. Yeah.
Yeah, he did the version of Amazed for Lone Star.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The pop version, the one that went number one. Yeah.
And just a sonic genius and a really great guy. And those, of course, that was Bobby Terry, who's like the town's secret weapon on acoustic guitar.
That was great.
One take. He's so annoying.
Wow.
He's just amazing.
Producer Katrina just texted in that she was singing along. Aww. Loved it. Can you say hey to producer Katrina?
Hi, Katrina.
Hi, Katrina.
There we go.
There we go.
Now she's happy. Yes. I mean, when the bass came in there, I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's kind of cool. It shows you, too, because obviously the arrangement of that song the first time we released it was very, very different.
Yeah.
You know, the production was appropriate.
But it shows you how strong the melody was even then. I mean, that you could take that same song
and
do it like that.
Different treatment.
And it works.
Yeah, something like that. That's right.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Oh, yeah. And those days were great, you know. It was back when, man, you could actually make a living selling music. And now everything's, fortunately for us, because we actually perform live, it went back to all about the live. And I explain this to up-and-comers. They say, you know, how do I get in the business? One, I have no idea other than getting on a talent show. And two... 10 years ago, we would give away the live shows to sell the records.
Right.
And now we give away the records to sell the live shows. It's all about playing
live. Isn't
that
nuts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But hey, look, it's fun. You know, it's hard on the songwriters who don't perform live. We're just songwriters. But not so much on the artists that are actually writing their own material and then performing. And we love to play live.
Right.
We have a great time doing it.
Well, you feel like doing that now?
Sure.
Do we want to do that?
No, look at the clock.
We got to take a break.
Oh, we got to take a break.
Let them play with their capo. We can do that. Get all tuned up, and then we'll come back in just a few minutes.
We can do that.
And we'll get a song out of.
Sounds good.
This segment was brought to you by Tin Pan South. Coming up March 28th. Are you guys playing Tin Pan South?
I hope so. Nobody's asked us to jump on a bill, but we'd love to.
Well, how about the four of us? We'll pick a street corner, and we'll just,
let's do it. It's on. Sounds great.
It worked for Ed Sheeran.
It'll be March 28th through April 1st. You can go to, it's the 25th anniversary. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Go to tinpansouth.com. All the great tickets, hundreds of performers, venues.
The passes may have already been sold out, but you can buy individual tickets.
Right.
And can I go ahead and plug one?
Go ahead.
Okay. 31st, I'm at Blue Bar, the early round at Tin Pan with Jimbo Henson, Mark Allen Barnett, and Randy Brooks. I'm really excited about that. So put that on your calendar. There, that was shameless,
wasn't
it?
In red of where not to go on Tin Pan.
It's ladies' night.
There you go. Oh, yeah. We're going to come back in just a few minutes with the Nelson Brothers. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's Some Women. Great new song by the Nelson Brothers.
Good stuff.
Yeah, that's going to be for Nelson the new trip. Yeah. For the brand new trip. Great. That's just a demo.
Demo.
Where do people find you on the interwebs?
Well, you know,
well, Gunner's address is...
Yes.
Okay. basically, we're all over the place, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff. Just look up the Nelson Brothers, spell it all out, or you get a plumbing company.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Oh, that's true. Mm-hmm. I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're at
Basic
Buddy
Roast.
We're at BuddyHyatt.com.
BuddyHyatt.com. And before we do another song, I don't want to miss this opportunity.
Sure.
Gunner, you've been really modest about talking about your MMA fighting.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Fortunately, the other Gunnar Nelson, not to be confused, actually can kick some pretty serious butt.
He's ER, though, isn't
no.
he?
No,
it's spelled the same way.
Gunnar. Gunnar. It's a Swedish name. Okay. Actually, we're a bunch of freaking Swedes.
That's right.
Well, that explains everything.
It does, doesn't it? Well, you know, our father was Eric.
Oh, you bet.
Shortened to Ricky, and his father was Oswald.
Don't you know?
His father was Magnus, and his father was Anders.
Magnus. So, there's a powerful name.
That's right.
I like that.
So, yeah.
Strong.
I don't feel so bad now.
Thor.
I know. I feel all right, yeah.
Okay, let's hear another song from y'all.
Sure. I wanted to do something that we haven't done in a long time. It was actually a single of ours, kind of pointed the way to where we are now. We wrote this with a great writer named Danny Tate.
Okay.
Danny Tate was a writer here in Nashville, and kind of came on hard times or whatever recently. But I got to tell you, his body of work was amazing. And wherever Danny is, this one's for him. It's called Cross My Broken Heart.
It's a good day for a sad song, 'cause the rain is falling and someone is saying goodbye. Close the door when you leave, 'cause there's a cold wind blowing and it's bringing tears to my eyes. After you go, I guess I'll never know where you've run. Will you try to disguise how you're diving inside? Well, you'll be the only one. Oh, I will get over you someday. Though I never loved you anyway. And when you're gone, my whole world won't fall apart, I swear. Cross my broken heart. Word gets round in the small talk town, but I'll stand my ground and won't even ask where you gone to. And when they play a song about love gone wrong and you see me crying, well, that won't mean I miss you. When I said I was crazy for you, I was out of my mind. When the smoke clears, I'll see it was not meant to be. Yeah, I will be just fine. Oh, I will get over you someday. Though I never loved you anyway. And when you're gone, my whole world won't fall apart, I swear. Cross my broken heart. Oh, oh, oh. I swear, cross my broken heart. Ooh.
My goodness. Yeah. Wow.
Oh. That was great.
Haven't sung that song in about,
puberty. That's right.
I
in
love
about
that.
25 hairstyles.
That's right.
Man. So what, just out of curious, like Scott and I are different. Like he hates the studio. I love. How are you guys different or the same in terms?
That's
of,
a good. Gunner's more studio.
Yeah.
Matt's more live. Okay. It's Gunner's actually become a really excellent recording and mix engineer.
Okay.
I'm too lazy to learn that stuff. I would rather hire somebody to do it.
Yep.
So that's just kind of how it is. I mean, and it's.
I just can't find anybody to work with me at 4 a.m, which is when I turn on my creativity.
So you had to learn it yourself.
You had to learn it yourself. But it's kind of cool, you know, and actually getting to have people like Brian Tankersley on your team to push you a little bit. And he's the guy that Mutt Lang goes to remix his stuff.
Wow.
There's no one better than that. And this town is so full of incredible talents.
That's true.
And I'm going to be honest and raise my hand and say that it's awfully nice to have a twin brother, you know, that will do your job for you.
See?
Yeah.
See,
yeah. Most of us will never know what
you
that's
like. You know
what?
Like. And if it weren't for his half of the cell, I probably wouldn't be here. So it's all good. It works out
Wow. So, oh, you both have so much nice things to say about each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's cool. You know, being brothers and stuff and being work partners for so long. I mean, we're really blessed because we didn't go down the same road as like heroes of ours, like the Everlys. Mm-hmm. I mean, towards the end there, I mean, those guys couldn't be in the same room, literally.
They had
to take different entrances onto the stage. Matt and I have always had each other. We're best friends, and we've been through a lot. You know, we really have. I think life's hard for everybody.
Sure.
But, you know, in our case, we actually go through the same sort of thing that most families do publicly. Mm-hmm. And you experience the highs and lows of your career and the losses of your loved ones and all that. And I really honestly believe that God sent us in here together because – you know, we could handle
it that way. We needed each other.
We really did.
We really did for what we had in front of us. And we're not done yet. Gunn and I actually just started writing a book.
Really? Oh, tell us about that.
Well, we're just starting it.
The working title is What Happened to Your Hair?
Do you get that question a lot?
All the time.
Oh, my gosh.
But see, I came up with another title. It was Who Killed Ozzy and Harriet? We thought that's a grabber. Anyway.
Okay.
But we're working on that. And when we were off here, we were talking about our new project, which we're going to be referring to as the Stone Canyon Band. And we're pretty excited about that. It's going to take everything that we've learned in our career, both in L.A. and in Nashville, those two worlds of what does it sound like and what's it about. And they're going to collide with some great musicianship, and that's something that we're focusing on for this next year.
And no matter how much we tried to avoid certain things that our predecessor, you know, our father, went through or embrace some of them, the fact is we've had a pretty remarkably similar road that he had. The only difference was, as we said, we came in as twins.
Mm-hmm, right.
So when times got tough for us, I'm not saying that our dad retreated because he didn't. He was a fighter and he never quit. But Gunner and I learned through what we've been through so far that you just can't get one over on both of us, you know.
And if one of you misses, the other will catch
if
it.
One of us has an off day on stage. You guys have been in bands before, you know. Mm-hmm. What it's like, you know. God brought us in here with spare parts,
right?
So all I have to do is shoot him the look and it's mm-hmm. like he takes the line and no one can tell.
Nice. Yeah. Will you guys come back and visit us again?
We'd love to. Okay. We want 2 hours next time, guys.
We'll do it.
You got it. That's awesome. So you find you guys online at
NelsonBrothers.com.
NelsonBrothers.com.
Yeah, we're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're all over the place. But if you just search the Nelson Brothers, we're going to come up right next to the Sprouse Twins. It's awesome.
Right. That's right. And a couple of really hairy comedians from Australia.
That's right.
True, right. They're actually called the Nelson Twins.
And the Olsen Sisters.
That's right.
All right.
Well, that's good company right handsome, there. So I mean, really. That's pretty awesome.
That's it.
You can find us.
Tune in next week. We'll see you later.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. The Music Row.